You're about to listen to the first experimental season of our show, formerly called NatOne Presents the Podcast. For better audio quality and our current ongoing D&D campaign, skip ahead to Season 2 featuring the Daft Monks.
On this episode of NatOne Presents. But I think the issue is that when you were younger, like, you watch cable, which means you watch commercials, which means, like, you were just beat over the head with, like, patriotism, like, and, like, kind of, like, it worked to some extent, probably, of, like, got you curious enough, you know, to at least check it out or watch the opening theme, or at least see that Tonga guy all lubed up during the open ceremony.
Adventure, heartwarming stories, role-playing that could only be seen by the gods. Here at Nat One Presents, you get all that and more. Now join us as we start another epic tale of
Just kidding. This is Nat One Presents, a tabletop role-playing game podcast that takes your favorite nerdy games and pop culture icons and ruins them with improv. Welcome back to Nat One Presents, the podcast. Chris.
Hey.
You're here?
I am.
Welcome back.
Thanks.
Today, we are going to talk about a few things. But before that, the intro that I forgot to do. As you might have noticed, Nate is not here today. He is lost at sea after his horror-themed cruise ship ironically capsized in a ghost port. So wish him the best, and we hope to see him soon.
Yeah. I think I've seen that movie, Ghost Ship.
Is it literally called Ghost Ship?
Yeah, I think so.
I wasn't even trying there. Okay, great. So today we have some sad news. Not really sad news, but things that probably should be more exciting, but aren't.
Yeah.
And of course, I'm talking about the Olympics. Do you have, like, back in the day, do you have fond memories of the Olympics? Like, did you watch it with your family? Did you?
I did some. But never Summer Olympics. Winter Olympics I like because they're just really, really strange.
Yeah. Like what? Which ones?
Well, curling is always fun to watch. Aggressive sweeping after throwing a rock.
It is.
And then the biathlon is always funny. Cross-country skiing and also shooting.
Oh, I didn't know that was a thing. Wow, that's fascinating.
Summer has triathlon, which is running, biking, swimming.
Yeah, normal things you would expect.
Winter is cross-country skiing and also target shooting.
I mean, if you're not shooting on skis, what are you doing?
Yeah, who knows? Apparently, it's an Olympic sport.
Wouldn't that be something if you had to, like, ski or snowboard and shoot targets? That would be some shit.
That would be interesting.
I wouldn't mind that. It'd probably be very dangerous, and the mortality rate would be through the roof.
High.
But get a gold medal on that, and you have my respect.
Yeah, and no one would probably mess with you.
At least not in winter climate terrain. Yeah. So I know some of them, like, Summer has some weird ones too. There's like they're on like the Ocho at like 4 a.m. But like power walking is one of them. Like that shit looks dumb as hell. But, you know, we can joke about it. But I don't know if have you ever like tried to do like a power walk like via the rules of power walking?
No, because I don't know the rules of power walking.
So it's like, so you have to be making contact at some point the whole time, which with actual walking, I don't think is totally the case. But like with power walking, like you have to, the minute like your other foot releases, your other foot has to be down. And so it's like really abrupt steps. And you're trying to go fast. And like, so it's just like, and like, it really is like when you think of like a middle-aged woman in like a tracksuit, like going like with like knife hands, like that's basically what Olympic for everyone power walking looks like. So that's a weird one. I don't know about the other ones. I like to like stay up late and watch, like, because they have like wrestling and some stuff that like doesn't get prime time, but it's like, it's pretty cool.
Not showy ones.
But, you know, like these days, and, you know, maybe it's the global pandemic, I don't know, but I'm just not, I have not tuned into a single event this year.
Yeah, me either.
Do you think it's like the state of the world? Do you think, like, to me, some of it actually, I think, is also just becoming a cable cut, like a cord cutter for cable.
I think that's definitely had like a huge part of it, of just like, I'm not around cable TV at all anymore. So it's a little harder to actually tune in and watch just casually.
Like, there are some free apps for sure where you can watch it. But I think the issue is that when you were younger, like, you watch cable, which means you watch commercials, which means like you were just beat over the head with like patriotism, like, and like kind of like it worked to some extent, probably, of like got you curious enough, you know, to at least check it out or watch the opening theme, or at least see that Tonga guy all lubed up during the open ceremony, which is the only thing I can remember from the last Olympics. But yeah, I think I think that has something to do with it. Like, versus just turning, I remember back in the day, you would like turn the TV on and it's channel 10, whatever, you know, whatever it was for your region. But here it's like, oh, I'd have to go, I literally would have to like look up, was it the NBC app? Is it like CNN app? I don't know, like what app would it be? And then it even was complicated back in the day. Like it was on multiple channels and some of it was on paid channels and you had to know what time stuff came on. So I also never found the like watch it back in the day. When you would like go back to watch clips, it wasn't very easy or accessible. Like it was like shitty technology to go back and like rewatch the events, especially to like, I remember with like gymnastics and shit, like they would talk forever before they would start.
Yeah.
So I'd be like, when does this start? Like, so I don't know. I think it's like, they've never mastered, like they can put on these events, but they've almost never mastered like broadcasting them. In
my opinion. Actually showing them off.
Yeah, and in a way that like makes sense. Like, you know, like I'm imagining like I like log into a panel and I like click the events I want to follow and I get like a dashboard. Like that's kind of like what I would expect. Like, and that's probably maybe a paid product, but like that's how I imagine the like right? That's like you follow feeds on whether or hashtags or whatever on Twitter and like that's how I'm now imagining like there's got to be like streams of like hobbies or sports that I like follow now. So, and maybe there is, maybe I've just done zero research and this stuff exists, but
I know there's been some stuff that like pops up on Twitter. I don't know if there's any live stuff. And I think on like Twitch and stuff like that, you're not allowed to like broadcast that stuff.
It makes sense. It does make sense.
So I think it's just the Olympics are old. It's still like pretty bound up in TV. So I think it's still just, it's hard to not see it when it's not on TV.
It makes sense. And also, let's face it, like it's expensive. And like, even like anyone sitting at home can imagine, like this is very expensive to bring all the top athletes in the world in one place, house them, have like, have snow in a place that doesn't have snow, like shit like that, or, you know, whatever they need for certain like competitions. So I get it. It's like, it's expensive. They need sponsorships. They need, which means they need to like put these on certain like things that bar them from some viewers, but it stinks.
Yeah.
In the headlines though, I don't know. The big one that I keep hearing about is basically how much, Simone
Biles.
Yeah. How she kind of like, they're under intense scrutiny and stress, and she just, unfortunately, I think they pulled silver, which is still amazing, right? But like,
oh, you only got second place in the world.
She actually withdrew from individual, like the mental, the toll is just too much. I've heard a lot of positive talks supporting her, and that like, and we're seeing this across the board, right? So many athletes, I know in tennis, multiple athletes have done this now where they're like, we're not going to do press conferences, or we're pulling out, like really starting to be like, hey, they're athletes and they're public figures, but they're also human beings.
Yeah.
And let's not break them.
Yeah. Weird concept.
So I'm totally cool with that. Do you know who got the gold in gymnastics?
I don't remember.
This is messed up, but going back to like fond memories, me and my dad always used to get like really upset because we're like, we basically assumed, and I don't know if this is just us being semi-racist maybe, but like we always assumed the Chinese competitors were not of age. That's kind of like the joke we had. I don't know if that's true, but like they look real young. Like they look like children.
That might just be genetics more so than anything
that's like a fond memory, and maybe my racist memory with my father might be a fond one, but I don't know. It was more just like joking about it, like they're cheating, right? You know, like whether or not they are, who knows, it doesn't matter. They could still like do backflips around me, and like they're more talented than I'll ever be in my wildest dreams. But I used to like enjoy that kind of competition between, I didn't care about any other country in gymnastics except China. Like I just hoped they didn't win. So spite is a powerful motivation for the Olympics. But I don't know, there's other headlines. That was obviously Simone Biles kind of not like killing it, was unfortunately the biggest headline I've seen. I know we did for the first time either get a medal or get a gold medal in fencing, and it was like a a female doctor who got that, so that's pretty bomb, kind of cool. That was unique. And then as a military person, I've seen a lot of news that they're in like shooting, one of the shooting competitions, an army woman got the gold or medaled or something. So cool stuff. I mean, it's cool to follow. I'm just not following it to the extent, like right now I'm just reading headlines. Like I used to watch it and I used to enjoy it and I used to talk about it with people.
Same. That's mostly where I've been getting any Olympic news. It's just like, this country won gold. And it's just like, yeah, they look real happy. Good for them.
Cool. It's sad. I wonder, like, are we apathetic to world events? But also then, like, is this a meaningful world event anymore? Like, does it, like, you know, obviously there was supposed to be probably the symbolism behind, like, oh, the Olympics, like, is, like, bringing us together and competing in, like, a healthy way instead of, you know, like, nuking each other and stuff.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, I've heard all these stories about, like, how much, like, child labor or, like, deaths have gone into, like, getting the Olympics ready, and that's really soured it for me too. And I won't name which sites have been guilty of that in the past. Probably most of them.
Yeah, probably all of them.
To be frank. So it's not the same anymore. I kinda would love to get my enthusiasm back, maybe a little bit of patriotism, but not today, Satan.
And that's saying something too, because the opening ceremony for this one was just playing a bunch of video game music and stuff like that.
I would have loved, like, so I do think, so we talked a lot, I think, like, about cultural shifts and maybe just, like, maybe more, like, the harsher, like, conditions that go around running logistically, but also competing in the Olympics. But at the same time, let's just talk about, like, I think it would have been badass to attend the Olympics in Japan.
Yeah.
Under different circumstances. But with a pandemic, like,
with the pandemic, the country being locked down, it being restricted to like pretty much just mandatory personnel there, even people that already had jobs for it, they couldn't go. It was a huge mess.
I bet also like they're miserable because like the point of like hosting these things, these things too, is like major money in tourism. And that's like not a thing. So now it's like, now you're just planning a really big event for the sake of it, which nobody does these things in the real world.
No.
So... okay, well, that was one kind of depressing topic.
On to the next.
What do you got for me, Chris? You're like the Grim Reaper of bad headlines, so...
So, I guess the Blizzard Activision stuff that's been going on.
Yikes.
So, if you're not aware, recently the state of California is suing Blizzard Activision for a bunch of substantiated... allegations of sexual misconduct and racism towards mostly their female staff, but you know, it's been a whole mess.
When a state, an entire state sees you, like we've seen lots of stuff with Riot, of course, like this isn't the first or last video game company to have absolutely toxic cultures.
Yep.
But the fact that the state of California is like behind this lawsuit.
Yeah. And this is after a 2-year investigation. So it's not like this came out of nowhere. No. This well researched. They've done the work for it already. So it's not like these are just claims that they're making. No, they've already found evidence to prove all of these facts. And I think it was like 40 or 50 different like statements that they outlined.
Yeah.
So it's a ton.
We all know that Activision is basically the devil.
Yeah.
I don't even want that sponsorship. That'll never happen. but what like was this? Is this a problem with the industry? Do you think when Activision had a heavier hand in Blizzard, that's when this stuff happened? Do you think that's always been the case?
I think it's always been the case. I just think that Activision probably sped it up with just kind of how Activision is with their business practices and stuff like that, kind of encouraging like just a lot of the negative traits that are going on.
They probably created like a pressure cooker of like just like stressful situations that then bad unchecked behavior just... festered immediately into other stuff. So I get it. I do think huge industry problem, no surprises there. Probably for a long time, it's kind of what we've seen a lot when like one sex predominantly like owns an industry, like that's just not good. Like in general, you always want like a little bit of diversity, definitely some different like perceptions, perspectives rather. And I think our industry for a very long time maybe didn't have that. And
a lot of straight white dudes. A lot of angry straight white dudes.
Yeah. And it hasn't scaled well, which is sad.
Yeah.
It's a sad because like I feel like video games for a long time, like, is it like, right, escapism, it's supposed to be this like positive place we go to, and like, even if you're playing a violent video game, it's not because you're a violent person.
Yeah,
it's this space, safe space you can go to express all or explore all kinds of different things.
Yeah,
and then like you go back to the real world as a normal person and not like a big deal. But it sucks that the environment to create this like escapism is usually incredibly toxic. And who knows what to do about it. I don't really know many people in the game industry. I don't have, obviously, an opinion on it, because that would be very dumb since I have no experience. But I don't know. How do we, like, make the workplace not disgustingly biased and like, just...
Well, on that topic, today, specifically when we're recording, is the day that the Blizzard employees are having their walkout. I think it's, like, 2,000 and some odd employees are not working today. They've called for people to, like... don't go on any of their game services, like leave it all alone, don't stream anything.
Done.
Yeah. So their goal is, if you want to make meaningful change, the only way like a big business is going to do that is by
take a giant hit.
Yeah, hitting them in the wallet.
Makes sense. Sad that that's how it has to be, and let's see if it's enough. It's tough though. I've been very guilty of it before. Like, I really look forward to you and a couple of friends have gotten me into Diablo multiple times, and like the Diablo 4 trailer I thought looked sick. Yep. So like I'm that person that like sometimes will still go back to a series that I want to play, even though like the company, you know, isn't that great. Yeah. I'm sure there's a lot of people who love Riot Games, even though they've had a mixed, you know, past. So what do we do? Do we really have to like stand by those statements if we actually care, or can we still play our favorite game, but also...
And it's also tough too, because... you want to not support the people that are doing this stuff, but you also want to support the people that are a victim of it. So it's, how do you figure that out, and how do you navigate that? And that's a lot of what I've seen from like the Blizzard community as a whole, of just like, don't be mean to the people that actually work there that have to deal with this. Don't tell them to like just quit their job and not work there anymore. Like, even people that like stream the games and stuff like that, a lot of that is you have to stream one thing, and if you're not streaming that, your viewership and numbers plummet, which is essentially like killing your own job. So it's been, a lot of people have been trying to figure out where to stand on a lot of this stuff, and it's been tough for a lot of people.
It is. I think that is the challenge of our generation, is actually being a little bit more committed to creating a better world, but having the self-awareness that like it's not so cut and dry as in the animes or the cartoons of like, right, everything comes at a price and a cost. And so like, oh, well, you know, they just stop playing their games. Well, then you fucked a lot of other people who have jobs and who were making changes in their community and and whatnot. So it's a more complicated question. And listeners, if you have an answer, go ahead and send us a DM and let us know how you can. This is a very serious tone for our show. We're usually very ridiculous.
It's very strange. This is a very long intro that we're having right now.
Yeah, whatever. It's all whatever. It's about video games. It's a video game episode. Okay, get over it. All right. Let's talk about the Patreon for a sec, because now since we're there, Nightbot still at large. Don't know who it is. I think he even liked or she. I don't know. I'm not gonna
judge.
They liked one of our posts, but they're not commenting. They're being very very elusive, very dodgy. So I don't know who the fuck you are, but I'll figure it out. And like I said, you know, the best way to prove that it's not you is to go ahead and sign up another Patreon account with your actual name, and then I won't question that at all, not even slightly.
Well, you never know. They could have already done that.
Well, no, we don't have any new patrons, so definitely not. Speaking of which, just a reminder, we have tiers as low as a dollar if you're listening to the show, and you're probably thinking, what would a dollar possibly do to improve your show? Well, this week, it bought me a leveler to fix the the branded Nat 1 art you have in the background of the show, so that's more of an improvement for our patrons, but... we're getting there, right? That dollar goes a long way. And by a long way, I mean all the way to your local Walmart to buy a 99 cent. Not even. It's probably less than that for a leveler. Yeah. I think I also have one, too. I think I bought a duplicate leveler. But anyway, don't know where I'm going with this. Go ahead and check out, if you like what you're hearing, either on the serious episodes where me and Chris ponder their big questions, or when Nate makes funny voices and calls people weird names, go ahead and support us. It actually does go a long way. It helps. We're actually starting, if you actually guys want to hear about the business side, we're starting to transcribe our episodes automatically. So our episodes will now be transcribed and uploaded to WordPress to get us some of that search engine optimization. So yes, more Nightbots can scan our website. Apparently it worked if we already got one Nightbot on the Patreon.
Get the rest of them. Get the whole family.
Exactly. That's the plan. All right. So today's actual topic is another All Things, and we are going to address one of my personal favorite series, Final Fantasy. Mm-hmm. Ooh, Final Fantasy. Probably we could talk about a single one of these games or this brand for hours, but today we're going to maybe talk about some of our favorite, like maybe top three-ish for Chris and I, and I think it'll differ a little bit, maybe some overlap. We're the same age, so I think we're motivated by some of the same stuff, but I mean, there's a lot to talk about. So $10.6 billion franchise. Mm-hmm. That is no joke. That is a pretty penny.
Oh, yeah. Especially for something that was the dying cry of a company.
Exactly. So the story behind Final Fantasy for our listeners, if you're not familiar, like, why is it called Final Fantasy? Especially since there's 15 main titles and about 4 million spinoffs. And the story goes, and I haven't researched it recently, but basically this was one of the last games a dying game development company was making. Yep. And so they called it, it was their last hurrah, their Final Fantasy. Mm-hmm. Well, it did really well. Final Fantasy turned into Final Fantasy 2, turned into Final Fantasy 3, turned into whatever the fuck number we are right now. It looks like 16 is the current one in development.
Yeah, I think 16 is the normal number.
Yes, the main title. So it's now lasted, I think we are what? So Final Fantasy 10 is in its 20th anniversary in the last month.
Earlier this month, I believe. I think the 6th.
That makes sense. And then I'm trying to think how far back. So, we're 20 years old, but that would have put us 20 years from now would have been 2001. And I think the first Final Fantasy is in the 80s.
Yeah, I think so, like 87 or something like that.
Yeah. So we're looking at like 35, 40 years of the Final Fantasy.
It's older than both of us.
That's crazy. Beloved franchise by many. Also, it's kind of also that thing we love to hate now. Like at this point, it's definitely not the underdog. You know, you expect to hear about a Final Fantasy of sorts, whether a mobile or a portable or just an actual main title every, you know, game conference.
Yeah.
What are your just like initial thoughts? Like, to like, are you over it? Too much, too little? How would you like some more? Is you just up and down there for the ride? Where were you at on Final Fantasy?
I still enjoy it, but it's definitely gotten a lot more like casual. I'm not super invested in it. It's more like when it comes out and then I hear about it a bit more, then I'll look into it, but I'm not like on the edge of my seat waiting to hear when the next thing is going to come out. I'm just very casual with it for the most part.
I think that's fair, and casual is the right word, because really if you've watched over the years, yes, they're continuing to develop main titles and other games, but they're also very heavily more into mobile more and more. So casual games are becoming more of their bread and butter.
Yep.
So you're seeing, I think, one of the last things, not Final Fantasy, but Square Enix, the company who currently owns Final Fantasy, which I think they might sell. I've heard is like rumors lately. But anyway, where I was going with this is mobile games are a big deal. What's the other game? The like Deus Ex, because that's another series.
Deus Ex?
Yeah, but not those. What's the girls?
Oh, Nier Automata?
Yeah, Nier. Well, just the Nier series in general. So they just released like a mobile game for Nier. Yeah. And then they have many mobile Final Fantasies. And so that seems to be a big focus of the company. I think I read in one of their recent
I think releases. The Japanese market is much more tailored towards mobile gaming more so than anything else.
Yeah. I zero research done here, so just talking out of my ass, but I would reckon they make so much more money on mobile. When I think of money I've spent on games, like over time, Pokemon Go is more than I've ever spent on a main title, including main titles with DLC on a game. So that's a lot. Big opportunity there. But they still do. So right now in the news, right, they were talking about Final Fantasy 16 the last couple of events. Unlike some of the previous Final Fantasies, we're not probably going to wait 10 years for these guys.
Surprisingly,
they announced it like last year, and we're looking at, I think, summer of next year.
Ooh.
Supposedly.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes.
We'll see, but like they usually don't say it so boldly. Like usually it's like it's coming, and then it's coming means
We'll talk to you again in 10 years.
They're like, they literally, I think, said like summer next year. So,
I mean, we'll see. That's I'm almost positive that's going to get pushed back.
But. Yeah. Well, and I mean, if that's still, if it gets pushed back to either holiday season, more than likely, or January seems to be a big one too, like right after the new year for whatever reason, or at the end of January, I would still be okay. That's still, in terms of game records between Kingdom Hearts 3 and Final Fantasy 15, which like both were like decades in the making or more. Maybe you think maybe they learned their lessons. Do you think maybe they're like, hey, maybe we have to release a game on like not a like decade type schedule?
I don't think so. I think it's more they put a game out, there was interest in it, and they're seeing that interest. I think it was, for whatever reason, the games came out, there was interest in it, they didn't do anything with it, and then they figured, no one wants to play this anymore. So then just it goes cold for a long time. So I think just this time is there's just still riding off the wave of, no, people are actually interested in Final Fantasy games, so we're going to put money into making more of them.
Yeah, I would say, which can lead us into a little bit about talking about their second MMO, Final Fantasy 14. Like that's really gained a lot of traction as far as MMO goes. Like it's definitely one of the top, if not the top MMOs now. And I think that has helped bring people back into Final Fantasy because there's plenty of like references and nostalgia throughout the online game. And I think that maybe people who weren't fans before, they see it and now they're like, well, I want to know who this person or this boss is. Maybe, maybe not. But I could see that happening.
Yeah. And also 14 for like, as someone who has played a few different MMOs, community is great, and that's something that everyone always like really goes off of just like everyone's actually very friendly there for some reason. So it is a very nice place to like get into MMOs and play it and stuff like that.
Yeah, and I think to put it nicely, the like weeboos who play Final Fantasy, like we're a non-threatening type. Like I am not the type who's going to tell you to slit your wrist on an online game. And like I don't play those games that are like really gross or toxic online because I can't handle it. And I think like I am very representative of the people who play Final Fantasy, having played 12 of the 15 main titles, plenty of spin-offs. Don't even get me started on Kingdom Hearts or other tie-ins. So I agree with that. I think the community tends to just be non-threatening. Doesn't mean, like, you know, once you start raiding or getting into endgame content, of course it gets, you know, you get more competitive or more whatever. But the biggest thing I find when playing, like, Final Fantasy 14 online is just that, like, hey, I don't have time to, like, do this. Well, just MMO stuff, right? Like, I don't have time to do my dailies and weeklies every week. Like, that, and that's the only time I've ever been, like, kind of excluded from a group is, like, well, there are communities who want to play every day, and then there's communities who don't, maybe, as much. And there's very few of those latter ones, but... so, Final Fantasy 14, I think that has reignited a lot of passion. I think it's also showed them, like... They've been very good about every 2 years you get an expansion, and the last few expansions, well, the last expansion did really well. Shadowbringer. And then we have a good, I have good feelings about the very soon coming Endwalker, mostly because I really like this promise that it is like a finale of their current arc. It doesn't mean they're not going to make more DLC. There definitely are going to be expansions, but the next one is going to try to like tie up what they've been leading to for 1, 2, 3. This will be the fourth expansion. So I like that. I like closure. For everybody has said for a long time, one of the reasons you play Final Fantasy 14 online is because it has a story. It has a like an actual engaging story from as far as MMOs go. And so I think it's even more bolder for them to be like, and we're going to like wrap some of people's some, you know, obviously it'll go on, keep going, but I would love it if some characters die. It's a personal turn on of me for people who know me. Movies and games where main characters die is a big one. So I'm hoping some characters die. Like I literally might just play this next expansion, not even touch just, endgame,
just for the story.
And I want to see where it goes. So that said, let's talk a little bit about our favorite Final Fantasies, our top three, as it were. You go first.
Well, I think one that we do share is Final Fantasy X. That was my first Final Fantasy, which a little later than most people, but I didn't have a whole lot of PS1 games. So that was more like a system that I shared with my dad. So, and I knew nothing about Final Fantasy at all.
Did you say PS1?
Yeah.
It was a PS2 game, for the record.
Final Fantasy X was. I'm talking about the other Final Fantasies.
Got you. Yeah, exactly.
Then when I had a PS2... obviously PS2, there were like a million different games for that. So,
well, and Final Fantasy X was, I don't know if it was a launch title, I was too young back then, but it was within like a year or two of the system launching. Yeah. I actually got one like the year around-ish, the first year of Final Fantasy. The PS2 came out. And basically my grandmother worked at a Sears and somebody tried to steal a PS2 by like they picked it up and somehow, and then they like hid it somewhere near an exit and they found it later. So they obviously like didn't come back or didn't try to like leave with it, but they tried to like move it closer. So they basically found one, and it was so close to Christmas, and they were worried that if they told people, like people would like trample. So then they opened it up to the employees of like, who wants this? And then my grandmother won, surprisingly. And I got a PS2, and I was like super
And you benefited
young.
From it.
Yeah. And I played, my first game was Bust a Move.
Ooh.
That's what I think.
That's nothing like any of the games you play now.
No, not at all. Not at all. But anyway, where I was going, so sorry, I totally cut you off there. That's fine. Final Fantasy X, once you got a PS2, kind of opened the gateway. That was your first one.
Yeah. And I had so much trouble with it.
Did you?
Yeah. It being like my introduction to just RPGs in general. I don't think I had really played anything like that before. I was more like, I played Spyro and Crash. Played some Tomb Raider. Like, it was...
It's not a precision game. It's more... And I wouldn't even strategies, I think, generous. It's more of just like... I don't know. RPGs, you have to like... it's a lot about resource management and story. Like, story-driven, in which you have to like do what the story tells you.
Yeah.
There's not running around blowing things up randomly for no reason.
And this was, because I played Spyro, but still, this was still like, everything was pretty open and there were like people to talk to and that kind of stuff. So me not really knowing what I was getting into was like, everything just felt giant.
Yeah. Well, and like literally, you know, back then you don't really see open worlds anymore, but like the open world type. I mean, yes, open world is like you can explore it, but in this, like the overworld map, I think that's actually what I was referring to, where you are a tiny person running around a giant like globe. That's like how all the old Final Fantasies up through like until 10, I think, basically, even 9 operated that way. And so, it really could feel overwhelming. I felt that way when I was younger too. Even my first one was, sorry, I keep cutting you off about talking about your favorite one, but Final Fantasy IV, which in the United States was Final Fantasy II.
I think that one was Final Fantasy III. I think III is the one that didn't get localized over here. So we called IV III.
Two and III didn't get localized over here. Mm. I think IV. I would trust me on this one.
I trust you. You're more the you're more the expert in this.
But same case, really, from Final Fantasy I all the way, you know, till 9 and 10. 10's open. It's just kind of linear for quite a while. But then at the end, you really can go back and explore everywhere. So I do recall that, like, excitement around, maybe not even excitement, but, like, overwhelmingness of, like, I could go back to any city and talk to everybody, and some of them are actually important, and I don't know it. That's crazy.
I don't want to miss out on anything.
Yeah. Absolutely. So,
for me, it was just, like, that was my introduction, and that's really like the mechanics, and that was really formed like that's what I like in games of like I like having to grind for things. I like getting to like kind of micromanage how stuff is, and it informed a lot of what I like in general for games.
Our RPGs are definitely one of those games, like they usually have a lot of side content, which really helps flesh out a game, maybe sometimes if there's not as much, and just makes it, to me, makes the world feel more full. That dumb go get, we all joke about like, go collect 6 of these things like for this like baker. It gets old very fast, but at the same time in other games that baker has literally no existence or purpose. And then when that baker makes you like ultimate weapon for some reason, then like, oh, that's pretty neat, you know. I love the surprises of that kind of thing,
like having to do the butterfly mini game for Kimari's weapon to like fully unlock it. It's just like, what does that have to do with anything? Why did I touch this red butterfly and all of a sudden a chimera popped out? What's going on?
Some of it is like so misleading too, because we've also like done these like, oh, this is going to give me a really good prize, and then it's like
I dodge lightning bolts 200 times in a row.
Yikes. 10 just has a lot of good memories, really good story, and to this day, very unique, I think, art. This whole, like, island Machina feeling. This ruined world, but it's very like tropical and island themed.
It's definitely very strange. It's like post-apocalyptic in comparison to like what 7 and 8 were. I think
Seven is post-apocalyptic, but that's more that's of like, I mean. That's it's very like, steampunk. Like yeah. I've seen that. I have not really seen in other popular media, kind of like 10 is almost like Waterworld, but not.
Well, I guess that is also part of the story of things used to be just like every other game, and then an apocalypse happened, and then it's like it's in the future where like nature has kind of come back, nature has retaken it or whatever the thing was. But it's like come back over and people are now like it's a thing that they don't have like good records of. So like religions and stuff have formed around it. And it like as someone who's older now looking back on it, it's like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That's like very.
Yeah.
That's how the world works for the most part.
Yeah. I like it is like some kind of, you know, still like preteen commentary, but like it's still some good commentary on like exactly like what is religion. There's factions that are just trying to fight and like sacrificing people, and then there's a religion, and there like I don't know, it's a little bit more mature than like take for instance some of the other Final Fantasies where it's just like kill the evil wizard, you know, like it's definitely more sophisticated than that. And the ending, like as a kid, like that really got me.
Devastating
absolutely.
And they ruined it with X2, but you know.
Ooh, yeah. So let's talk a little bit about X2. I got it. So as a kid, I will say I was very close-minded as a child. So like having like, of course, like my party was all guys. It was like Kimari, Orin, Tidus. And then like you get 10-2 and I'm like, so I only play with women and like their outfits are what drive the battle mechanics. Series. Yeah. I was like, oh, I think going back, I would be, you know, I'm a more, much more open person now, I'm a different person completely. Actually. I think I would give it more of a chance, but it was, I just didn't like change. And the fact that the battle system was also like more, yeah, it went back to like ATB versus turn-based.
Yeah. And you couldn't like plan stuff out. I had a really hard time with it.
I wanted to like it. I've also read more. That's one of the ones. Couldn't get through it. Then went and like read all of the plot points, secret endings, futures, even like mobile game stuff. And it's actually also kind of sad. Like it doesn't get much happier.
Yeah, I don't doubt that.
What do you know about some of the other? So there is like a kind of ish canon weird book that came out after 10 that takes place.
I have like very faint memories of that being a thing and it being,
it's weird.
Yeah, it's real strange.
It's weird. Like someone dies by like a bomb exploding. And then there's like weird sex stuff involved. It's very bizarre. It's super weird.
Yeah.
It basically, if you have like the 10-10-2 remaster that came out for like PS3 or whatever, they have like, you can listen to like, there's like an audio story for what happened after. Basically, like, it's almost like Sin comes back, but it's all like, they're all like dream versions. And then like, so because of that, Tidus is back too, but her and him and Yuna don't get along. They're like separated. It's very odd.
Yeah.
Not the happy ending I think we were all maybe hoping for if the story continued. And it's like kind of canon. So pretty weird stuff. Don't, basically what I'm telling you is if you really enjoy 10, I won't tell you either way about 10-2. Maybe there is a shot there, but don't read the other weird shit, like the canon Japan side story, because that got weird.
Yeah.
But yeah, 10, I think really great. Fun story. Great villain. Memorable villains, too. Oh, like, Seymour creeps me out to Seymour this day. Guado. Right? And, like, also attracts me, too. Like, that whole shirtless thing is fantastic.
That very, very deep V that goes all the way down almost to his crotch. Yeah.
Yep. That'll do it. 10's pretty solid. Now, do you think there is some overhype? So, for us, I think Final Fantasy 10 for us was kind of like what, to some people, like Final Fantasy, or actually Ocarina of Time was to other people. Some people are like, Ocarina of Time was the greatest of all time and it'll never be matched. And for me, I've went back and played Ocarina and it is by far not my favorite Zelda. And I think that was one of the first ones to take a giant leap in the 3D.
Yeah.
And similarly, that's kind of what happened where like there was 3D in 7, 8, and 9, but it was, you know, it was like,
different.
It was PlayStation like, 1 3D, yeah, which was
still a painted background that you were running a 3D character on.
Whereas 10 was not. So do you think maybe we have that level of like nostalgia going on for 10. Maybe it's not as good as the game. It's just the right time, the right jump in technology.
I think it's definitely high up there in terms of like quality from the Final Fantasy series. I think probably it is a little overhyped for us, but I think it's just, it was a good game in the PS2 era, which was full of some of the best games for like PlayStation general.
That's true.
So it was like, quality wise, it's very good. And it does, it's like defined for the most part, like these are what you do for JRPGs and stuff like that. So
I will say, I'll give it a little bit of a knock. One of the areas it was one of the weaker Final Fantasies for me until this day is endgame content. Yeah. It didn't have a whole lot
in the US version.
In the US version. But I've also played the not network, because we've kind of got the whatever you want to call the it, PAL, the final mix or the PAL version. It's only a little bit more. Yeah,
it's only a little bit more
dark
stuff.
Summons and an additional boss. And that's really it.
And they're mostly about just kicking your shit in.
Yo, my goodness. And, you know, I know you've heard these stories 1,000 times, but my like claim to fame for the PAL version is that I let my friend, when I got the remaster, me and my friend were super into Final Fantasy X. He came and visited for a few months after college before he found a job. And so he was playing through it, and it was kind of fun when I was like watching him. And he basically forgot to get the secret sphere in the first in Besaid, which you can't go back to for a very long time. And then you can't go back to until the dark summons are already available.
Yeah. And you can't sneak around it to get in.
No. So to get back, so to go get that secret sphere, which you need to get Anima, which you need to get the Maga sisters, two of which are very important for not getting your ass thrashed by these other Aeons. You need to go, you need to have all the spheres. So when you go back to, when we went back to get that one, Valifor, Dark Valifor, which is like, even just, he's like the weakest of them all, and he's ridiculous OP.
Yeah.
Long story short, the only way I lucked into beating him by basically Yojimbo. And yes, like if you know what you're doing with Yojimbo, there is a formula that with some tweaking, like you can pretty easily, I would actually say.
There are calculators for it now.
It's not bad, but I did not know what I was, I did not, I don't like to look those up. That's not how I want to play the game. But I like just whipped out. I only had like one move before, because basically,
if you hit him, he's dead.
Or what I meant is actually that when you fight Valifor, like I would maybe get one or two turns in, and then he would get like three consecutive turns, because he's one of the fastest ones too, probably along with Ixion, and he would just kill the whole party. So I'm like, I only have one turn, take out Yuna, summoned, gave all my money as a joke, because I know I'm gonna die anyway, and then just reset. And he fucking did it. He did it's not Zentetsuken, he has a different one. Yamato, I think, is the one.
I don't quite remember.
He does his ultimate move. It kills Valifor. Bing, bang, boom. I can go get the secret sphere. And I actually was able to finish up and get the rest of the Aeons and actually power up. So that's my claim to fame. But as far as endgame content goes, like even with the PAL version, I'd say it pales in comparison to a lot of the other Final Fantasies.
Yeah, it's not great. It didn't have things like the ultimate weapons that, you know, 7 has. I think 8 has the gem weapons, more or less. There's like ruby weapon and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. There's at least three. There's emerald, ruby, I think another one. Yeah, so I would say, I mean, even the one that comes to mind for me for best endgame content. So I'm going to say Final Fantasy X, best all around Final Fantasy.
Main story, gameplay, story-wise, it's probably one of the best.
Memorable experience overall. I'm going to say best end game content or just like additional content for me, Final Fantasy 6.
Not one I played.
6 is really great. Kefka. So
a very, very memorable character.
Everyone
knows, even if they don't know 6 at all.
Thing with 6 is that Kefka succeeds in destroying the world. Like you get really far in the game and then you fail. All the people, like the world goes into ruin, and you like wait, kind of it's kind of like Ocarina of Time in that too, like when you jump in the past and like, well, shit's changing again, Ganondorf did shit, kind of that, except in that happens so early in Ocarina of Time, whereas like when it happens in 6, you're almost devastated because you've already put in like dozens of hours and like, oh fuck, I like, and like shit's like destroyed. But anyway, then you like piece together your team back all over the world. But lots and lots and lots of I'd say endgame character. Nice things about some of the older Final Fantasies, entire players are sometimes unlockable that you can't get. So that's not really a thing you see in these new games, because way too much development time to not have you find maybe a main character.
Or have you pay for it separately.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Too much of an opportunity there. But yeah, 6 has a lot of great stuff. I can think of at least... In 6, there's at least one unlockable character. There's one you can lose if you don't choose correctly, where you don't get him back in the World of Ruin. And then I think there might be another character you can miss out. Or there's another like secret character you can get. Lots of summons. Lots and lots of they're called Espers, I think, in 6.
Yep.
Lots of them you find through very unique scenarios, like in the wild or... A lot of them you have to like defeat somewhere, but like all kinds of wild places.
Yeah.
So big fan of 6. Long story.
Is 6 set in Ivalice?
No.
No?
Ivalice is 12.
Ivalice is 12, but it's also a lot of the handheld ones.
It's also... Tactics, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just, it covers like a lot of different things.
It does. I don't think though it's 6.
Just because they also call summons Espers in that, so I didn't know if it was the same.
Oh, that
one
would make sense. Yeah. So yeah, I'll give 6 as a top 3 for me, because end of world, lots of end game content, and just like lots of characters too. I love lots of characters.
Yeah,
that's a cool thing. And the mechanics were very unique for some of the characters to this day still.
Like what?
Okay, well, you have a guy that is just a mimic, and like we have Blue Mage is like a thing that's very common in Final Fantasies, but there's one guy that's like purely just based on mimicry. There's a painter who, like, I don't remember what his thing is, but it's like, I don't know if he like stole elemental types based on I don't remember what paint really translated to in terms of gameplay, but he was a painter. Of course you had a ninja. Of course you had, you had like a wrestler. Of course you had like a swordsman. You had whatever the main chick was, which was, she was just like, she's like a summon that's like half human or whatever. You have, oh, just a beast child who was raised in the wilderness. He's pretty cool. You have, and then you have a pilot, of course, and I could go on and on. And I also like, there's some so one of the guys you find, so you have to get eaten by like a monster in a desert, and with inside that monster you find a character, and that's the mimic guy who doesn't talk. And there's like stories that there's like the king that's like in charge of Kefka before Kefka betrays him and kills him. There's stories that that's who that character is. All kinds of, just there's lots of like, the more you read into it, there's quite a bit. I love like inferred story or just potential like loose or vague story that lets you kind of come up with your own solutions. I also, you know, I like people that die, and the whole thing with the ninja is that when you're escaping right before the world's destroyed, you can wait for him or just leave, and if you just leave, he doesn't come back and he's dead, but if you wait for him, you can pick him up. And also I think the ninja is the son of the painter, and there's also a girl who's a summoner who's like the daughter or something like that bullshit. So lots of, I don't know, lots of good stuff. I think six is definitely a top three for me. And if you like the retro stuff but want the more intense story that you get from the later games, six is like a really good in between.
Would you say six is probably where Final Fantasy started to pick up into having more story heavy, but also like touching on more like teen to adult topics?
I didn't play 5, and then I did play 4. I think 1 through 4 are very cliche, good but cliche.
They're very like vanilla fantasy.
Vanilla fantasy. It's not until, I can't speak for 5, but then once you get to 6, because you have Magitek is now more of, I think that was kind of more of the introduction to Magitek by then. And so, yeah, I think that's where like they start to incorporate like, okay, let's have some steampunk. Okay, let's address like teenagers or other themes that aren't just like, you see them in the other games, but they're just a deeper. So, yeah, I would say yes. I think so. But if you had to ask me, I think 7 and 8 is where they really like, 7's where you had weird stuff too, like where like the push-up challenge and like really goofy stuff like that like I think almost relates more to like teenagers.
Well, like I said, like 6 being more like the transitionary one of just like going from that very generic fantasy of the early ones to like 7 being about environmental terrorism, mm-hmm. how things are affecting the world and yeah. stuff like that. 8, I think you can speak to more of like the general overarching story and stuff like that. But that's when I think story became more of a focus.
I
think so.
Like I said, I don't know what 5's deal is, but yeah, 6 is kind of about, because it's about the exploitation of espers, mm-hmm. and then like the esper, they had their own world, like being like closed off, and then when they open it, Kefka takes advantage of their power, and then the main character is like a mix between humans and espers, so she's mm-hmm. supposed to like bridge the gap kind of thing. So yeah, I would say that's where that, I think that one's just about like acceptance and not exploiting
yeah.
Like other, you know, minorities or whatnot, and mm-hmm. their power and what. So yeah, I'd argue. What would be next on your top 3 list?
So for me, I played a lot of Game Boy Advance. Mm-hmm. So for me, my other two for this top 3 are from that. So for me, I think it would be Dawn of Souls, which was 1 and 2, but on yep, the Game Boy.
I remember that one.
So I played 1 a ton, not as much 2 because of how much time I put into Final Fantasy 1, but Final Fantasy 1 was one that I went back to later to more understand like why it is that I like this stuff and to like kind of explore the roots nice. Of JRPGs cool. yeah. and like what they are. And I liked it a lot. I had a lot of fun with it.
Yeah, 1 definitely is like, they did put a lot into the open world, and 1's one is one of those games where if you take the time and like don't go where you have to go and like look around, mm-hmm. you find a lot of weird shit, you know? Oh, yeah. 'Cause I don't even think you have to do the Bahamut upgrades. That's totally yep. optional, right? Like that's
yeah, it's a very, just a random yeah. fucking cave that there's one yep. spot on this island that's mm-hmm. way off on the side that you can yep. land.
For those of you that don't know, that whole premise is like basically you start off as a class. There is an upgrade to that class. Mm-hmm. If you're, I forgot, like
there's thief.
Becomes ninja.
Yeah. Warrior, which turns into paladin.
Paladin, yeah.
There's,
I don't know what the mages are.
Yeah, I know they start as, I think they start as mages and then they change into another word for mage. But they have red, white, and
there was black. A red mage.
And then there's also monk, which I don't know what monk turns into because I didn't play monk. Because I yeah. thought they were awful because no. they didn't have weapons.
No, I didn't do it either. Yeah. So, but anyway, like pretty essential. Like, or one might turn in, one turns into Dragoon, I think. I don't know.
I don't think so.
No, maybe not.
I think 2 had more Dragoon okay. stuff.
That's fair. Well, anyway. Right, huge thing of like basically massive upgrade to mm-hmm. your characters, like your class is upgraded and all of your like skills and stuff, and you could just not run into that kind yep. of thing. There's also this like, you know, weird castle of infinite or caves of like infinite levels for like challenging. I don't know yep. if that was added for Dawn of Souls or not, but like that shit went on forever, and like yeah, that was pretty cool as well.
100 and some odd floors, but I think it's like every 10 floors there's like a boss, and they're bosses from the game but upgraded.
Yeah,
and then once you start getting down to the bottom levels, they're like insanely difficult yeah. that you have to know what you're doing going into it to absolutely get through.
Wild. Yeah, I love that. So 1, yeah, I think like it saved a game company for mm-hmm. a good reason, and it did. It that 1 definitely put the rest of the games on track for the next like 4 or 5 games. So mm-hmm. I didn't like 2 that much, to be honest. I played 2 because it was part of Dawn of Souls as well for Game Boy Advance, mm-hmm. but wasn't a huge fan.
No, I had a lot harder time of like getting into it. I think part of that was what turned me off at the very beginning was I didn't know where I was going, so I went the wrong way and I wandered into mm-hmm. a high level zone because there were no like bridging things. So there's like a level 1 zone right next yeah. to like a level 20. So I like started a battle and then it just killed me off.
That
and
sounds
it's like,
right.
I haven't even saved yet, so I gotta start all over.
I do love that shit. Things you kind of don't get anymore on these like very linear gameplay paths. And I think it's to make sure like you go the right direction and you have fun. Yeah. But like, I liked knowing like, I'm in danger. Like, don't go to that tree. Like,
yeah.
Like, those woods are dangerous. Like, yeah, that was fun for me.
There's definitely like a certain nostalgia to it. And I think places don't do that now because consumers have so many options that like, if you do something and the game gives you like a bad taste, they're just like, no, I don't want to do this. I'm going to leave a bad review and never play this again, which yeah. is bad for business.
Exactly.
But it's before, if you bought a thing, you're stuck with it and you're definitely going to be playing it.
Yeah, because I think you actually got a little bit more creative vision because they're like, fuck it, I'll throw it in. Like, doesn't have to be liked per se, you yeah. know? I think we could take a break for a second and say, so the Pixel remasters have come out recently.
Yeah, I think it's actually either today or yesterday that they were released.
I think it just happened. Thoughts on Pixel remasters? I have mixed thoughts.
I don't know. I haven't looked into it enough to know exactly what they are. I know overhaul for the art, obviously, calling it a Pixel remaster, and like some of the screenshots that I looked at, it looks better. To a degree. I like pixelated
it's
stuff.
Yeah, it's meant to look as it did, but it's meant for...
It's meant to look like what it looked like in your head when you were playing it.
Yes, exactly. Like, it's 8-bit, but on high res, which if you look at, like, or whatever, however many bits, if you look at that stuff, if you actually, like, plug in a Nintendo on, like, a regular classic Nintendo on, like, a 65-inch television, 1080, whatever, 4K television, it looks atrocious.
Yeah, because it wasn't made for that. It was made for CRTs.
Exactly. And so I think the Pixel remaster, I mean, obviously, I don't think you would want to play them on 4K still either, but I think the point more, like, for mobile, which has plenty of density and high resolution anyway, it looks a lot better.
So I'm mixed about them. I think it's, like, great. I'm glad that these things are available through, like, legal means. There's no, like, sketchiness about it. If they improve the coding of it, that'd be great, because, you know, these ports are always awful, because it's usually, we're giving you a port of this. It's the mobile port. We just kind of slapped it on the computer. It's still garbage.
Yeah, like, give it to us clean. Like, you're selling the same games over and over and over again. That's truly what this is. It's another way to rehash the same games and make more money. Mm-hmm. And I'm cool with that to some extent. I do want to play it on my more recent devices, and I do want to, I'm willing to pay for it if you make it available. But, like, you have to add value. Not saying add, they don't have to add more to the game every time, but, like, you can't be giving us a port of a port that, like,
don't,
you know.
Don't give me a piece of shit.
Yeah.
Like, if I'm paying for this, make it at least work.
Which we've seen on some of the, like, for instance, on iOS, they have some of, like, the whole, like, PlayStation 1 titles on the phone, and they don't, they're not great.
Yeah, they don't work well. And it's the same with PC, unfortunately, which is one of the oddest things, because you would think it would be the easiest place to port stuff, but... It's always a terrible job.
It is. Well, I remember, so if we talk about, so Final Fantasy VIII is my, like, nostalgia favorite. I played that. First one I ever played was Final Fantasy IV, again, thinking it was 2, because that's what the Super Nintendo cartridge said. But after that, I played 8 and never played 7. And 8, it was fun. It was 3D. It was, like, it was really, like, teenagers, which was kind of cool, you know, as a young kid.
I can relate to this.
Yeah. But the interesting story is we only recently got, like, a remaster. I don't know. It's a remaster, if you call it that.
Yeah, I think remastered's the right
I think
word
the term
for
they
it.
Used. We finally got a remaster, and everybody was like, "Why did this take so long?" Like, we had so many other remasters. Mm-hmm. Like,
and you did all the games around it, but you didn't do this one.
So what happened? And what happened was, well, they lost a lot of the files. Like, a lot of the original files weren't saved, and so they had to get a lot of it back. And I think from what I read, they actually the game came out on PlayStation, and then it also came out on PC, but PC was like an afterthought, and it wasn't exactly the same as what came out on PlayStation, and like some of the shit was just like more like forced or rushed or not complete on the PC. So then when they went back to like the years later when they wanted to remaster the PlayStation stuff, they're like, well, we only really have the like PC ports, and they're not even like totally accurate, or like the music files aren't even totally right. And so it took them, they still released like Steam ports that were the shitty PC ones, but they didn't release on the console the when they couldn't emulate it anymore and they had to remaster it. Then that's when we just didn't have it for a while. And it's just funny to think that like, yeah, we lost the files. Like in today's thing, that'll never happen. But back then, you know, we didn't, obviously technology was not quite as advanced, and you didn't have like, oh, I'm just going to have cloud storage forever and servers, you know, hidden somewhere.
No, Jim accidentally stepped on the floppy disk and ruined the entire project.
Straight up. It was on Jim's device somewhere for a period, you know. Well, I don't want to, you know, we could talk about Final Fantasies forever, truly, but I think we'll end with, we talked about the Pixel remasters and, you know, is it worth it? But then recently they did, and recently I say now, a year and a half, 2 years ago, Final Fantasy VII Remake, and that was a ground up, like, all right, we're going to revisit Final Fantasy VII, not verbatim, but very close, but we're going to rebuild it ground up.
Yep.
I just recently started playing it, and my just quick take, I actually think it's pretty clean. I've played 7 as well on the PlayStation. Mm-hmm. It's very convoluted in my opinion. Like a fun gameplay, but the story like is absolutely all like incoherent in my opinion. Like Kingdom Hearts level insanity, Kingdom Hearts 3 level confusion, I would say. But overall, I was like, the remake, very clean, very like, okay, this is what I would expect a modern Final Fantasy. It looks good. It plays well.
Yeah.
I'm having fun with it. So I like it. And that has really, I think when I heard they're like, they're just going to remake 7, I'm like, God, you're just trying to cash in on like everybody's favorite. And I'm like, you know what? If this is the level of like reinvention you're going to go from, like go at these with. Okay, you have my blessing. What are your thoughts? I know you, I don't think you played, but you watched through a lot of it?
Yeah, I've only watched you play, actually. I haven't done too much with it. But from what I've seen, there was care put into this, and you can actually see that when you're playing it. And that's the thing that really makes it. This doesn't seem like it's just a cash grab. Like, yeah, they're going for the nostalgia angle, but they're also putting effort into this and making it its own fleshed out.
It is, and it's polished, and then it doesn't have the Final Fantasy 15 effect of like, oh, they're only releasing it in chunks. And I know people are like, oh, I have to buy multiple versions of this game, but at least you're not getting a complete game, but you're getting a finished part of the portion you're playing. Yeah. Whereas Final Fantasy 15 had parts where I'm like, oh, you didn't finish this whole section of this game.
Yeah.
And that's a little bit of a weird feeling to play in a game that you spend. And let's face it, they're not cheap anymore. Mm-hmm. Games for a while now have been $50, $60, $70 now is what we're looking at.
So yeah.
For a new title. Mm-hmm. I'm a big fan. Last thing I'll say, I really didn't give my third favorite. And I will say Final Fantasy 15 actually did turn out to be a top one for me. It's not finished, and it never will be. They've later released a lot of other DLC that kind of fills in some of the gaps.
Yeah, there's the Royal Edition.
Yeah, it is not the end-all, be-all. It does not, I don't think it completes the game, but yeah, it fleshes it out more. But you can't play it linearly either, which really doesn't work super well. But Final Fantasy 15 I think was a lot of fun. It's a road trip with your bros, which I never would have expected to be like a great Final Fantasy premise, but it's a lot of fun. It brought me back a lot more to, it's closer to an open world we've had in a long time.
Yeah.
When you look at like 12, 13, I would say it's more of an open world. 12 had an open world as well, but I felt like 13 actually, like there was a lot to explore.
Yeah. 12 was a lot more like it's open, but it's map based still. Like you had big maps and there were multiple connected to an area.
Yeah.
But that's a lot different than 15, which is just, here you go, you're in a field, go.
And the car mechanic was fun. Like, it was fun. You're like, you could use it to fast travel, but you could just ride with your bros.
Yeah, you could just drive if you want.
And then great, like, giant, like, fucking demons would, like, appear. Or it's just said demons, isn't it? It's demons, but
yeah,
spelled demons. Whatever. Like, giant, like, things would, like, block you in the road. It was good. Like, they felt like there were stakes. Mm-hmm. I screamed sometimes. I was surprised.
Hopping into a sewer and then someone jumps out at you.
That was crazy. I wish I could go back and relive that moment. And then, like, there's a 2-hour platformer built into the end game content, which is, I'm not going to say that's great, was great content, but it was something.
Yeah, it was definitely an evening that we spent doing that entire thing.
And it gave you a really great item. I like when they reward you.
Black Hood or something like that?
Yeah, something like that. It's like an auto dodge, which when you fight like the Master Tomberry is like almost essential to not.
The Master Jedis.
Yeah, the Jedi Tomberries. Lots of fun, like moments where I was sad, moments I wanted to cry for some of the characters. Mm-hmm. So the biggest thing was it just wasn't finished, but like I got their vision, I enjoyed it, and I definitely, had I really gotten what I know they were building towards, it would have been something really special, and it still is for me. So,
and I think it also got a little handicapped by the fact that people were waiting on it for so long.
Sure, it was bound to not be great after that long. Nothing is worth waiting 10 years for.
It's the same with Kingdom Hearts 3 of just like people were waiting for so long that expectations were so high, it was never going to meet it.
It ended up doing the opposite. I thought Kingdom Hearts 3 was going to be amazing just by waiting 10 years, and I had low expectations for Final Fantasy 15, and I think it ended up being flipped for me. 15, I thought, actually lived up to, I didn't live up to expectations, but it was
passable.
It was a pretty great experience at times for me. Like, I had a really good time. And then Kingdom Hearts 3, I was very upset. Like, I was very just angry playing most of that game because I'm like, it just wasn't what didn't.
This is a letdown.
Not even close. We're going to wrap it up because, man, Final Fantasy could go on and on and on and on.
There's a lot.
So thank you so much for listening. Again, if you want to support our show, if you want to help me fund Nate's evacuation from whatever random...
From the ghost ship
that he is on, go ahead and become a patron. It's only $1. Bonus episodes every month, video recordings if you want to see the funny faces Nate makes, or just me and Chris sternly looking into each other's eyes, talking about video games passionately. Yep,
avoiding the camera the entire time.
Exactly, yeah. don't mention that. That's fine. If you're a Nightbot, reveal yourself. And thanks for listening.
Yeah, bye.